I'm seriously in love with the idea that you're calling this series adulting. I love that word. And does this thing, probably doesn't raise like a normal, it'd be nice if it'd be a little higher. That way I don't have to do this. So I think the last time I was at YAF was this summer when I epically failed at two truths and a lie, and I told three truths without realizing it. So I'm not going to try that again. I'll just go with truth tonight. So I'm Corey. I'm one of the pastors here, and I'm celebrating 18 years of single adulthood. So, yeah. And so I feel like I have some material on this topic, not just from the Bible, but from my own life. So, yes, so celebrating singleness. Since I was 18, it's been 18 years, right? So almost 19, that's how. Yeah. It's almost here, yes. So I was sitting in our pews not too long ago when Paul got up to preach, and he started his introduction with, "My wife and I, Rachel, were celebrating 18 years of marriage," and people started applauding. And it just struck me in that moment of how often I'd heard people say that they're celebrating so many years of marriage. And yet I'd never heard anyone get up and introduce themselves by saying, "I'm celebrating so many years of singleness," right? And I think that's just one of the ways in which we could hear someone talk about celebrating a long marriage and then feel like we might be less than because we can't celebrate that same thing. And so tonight I want us to kind of refocus our idea of singleness around Scripture, and then we're going to kind of confront some of the myths that the church gives us about what it's like to be single or what the purpose of singleness is. So I want to make some caveats before I do this. I have absolutely nothing against marriage. I think it's a great thing, and I want to do everything to support healthy marriages. And I think there's nothing wrong with wanting to get married or wanting to have children. Those things are wonderful, too. If you know me, you know that I love kids and I love babies and I adopt other people's, and I hope to literally adopt someone else's child. If I value singleness, it doesn't mean that I devalue marriage. So anytime you hear me say something strongly about singleness, I'm not sending the opposite message, right? There's nothing wrong with dating either. So just because I am fully embrace my singleness doesn't mean I don't think you should date to be like more spiritual. So please don't read those messages into anything that I say, okay? So just let's start there. How many of you, like if you could guess in the American population, what percentage of the adult, so 18 years and older, of the American population is single right now? Yes. So divorced, never married, 40. Widowed. 40%?
36. 45 is right.
So of American adults, 30. Today, how many, what percentage would you say are unmarried?
60.
So there's a huge range in here. Of what our guesses are, but as of the last census, 45% of American adults are unmarried. And of those 45%, 63% of them, that's 109 million Americans, have never been married. So if you are single in America today, you are in good company. You are not really a minority. You're like neck and neck. So you might feel like, especially if you're a Christian and you're involved in church, you might feel like you're a minority, but you are not. 53% of those singles were women and 40% were men. So it's really not that different between adult men and women. There's a research center called Pew. And it has nothing to do with church, although they do a lot of religious research. And they did a study in 2013 and found that 61% of Americans who were unmarried wished to marry. So more than half. 12% said that they did not want to marry. And 27% weren't sure. So it's just interesting to think about. I don't know what you hope for yourself. If you don't want to marry, if you want to marry, you're not sure. But those are just some what other Americans are thinking. So I want to ask you to interact with me and tell me what your experience has been like in the church. And I specifically want you to think about, what messages have you received from the church about singleness? So it could be what someone has said, or what someone has implied, or how you've been treated, that is sending you a message about what it's like to be single. So what have you picked up in the church? Yeah.
Paul tells us it's better not to marry, in fact.
So you've actually heard someone preach this. Yeah. Okay. What else have you heard or received as a message?
It's abnormal if you don't get married and have kids, especially.
Mm-hmm. That it's abnormal to not get married or even to not want to. Mm-hmm. So you're not quite fully adulting unless you marry. Man, alive, yeah.
That's a spiritual one, a spiritual gifts.
Yeah, uh-huh. So we'll talk about that a little bit later, that it's a spiritual gift. Have you received any really negative messages or implications?
Yourself, like character-wise, in order to be married. Mm-hmm. So it's like a stepping stone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so singleness is like, really, all singleness is to prepare you to be married.
Yeah.
I've heard that too. Anything else?
You're not going to be as spiritually mature if you haven't gone through marriage.
Okay, you won't be as spiritually mature if you haven't been married. Mm-hmm. You'll be self-centered or selfish, he said. Anything else? I had hoped to not really hear anything. No, it's great that you interacted with me, but I had hoped that, you know, in the last 10, 15 years, the church had gotten better at not sending negative messages to single people. Not that everything you shared was negative. My favorite book is Pride and Prejudice, and it opens with a really famous line. But if you don't know the book, you wouldn't know this is famous, but it is. It says, "It's a truth universally acknowledged that a single man in possession of a good fortune must be in want of a wife." That's how Pride and Prejudice starts. And then it goes on to tell the story of, like, there's this fabulously wealthy man and everyone tries to throw their daughters at him. So sometimes when I think of being single in the church, I want to change the sentence a little bit to kind of encapsulate what it's like to be single. So this, I've rewritten it. It says, "It's a truth universally acknowledged that any healthy single Christian must be in want of a spouse." Sometimes I think that that's, if we had to write a book about singleness in the church, that's how it would start. So let's go back and look at what Scripture says. So if you want to pull out your smartphones and turn to 1 Corinthians 7 or an actual Bible that's not electronic, those are still cool too. 1 Corinthians 7. If you've seen me teach much, you know I care a lot about context and I do a lot of research and try to give everyone a good picture. I did none of that this time. So I made a bad pastor, and I didn't, like, go back and read the whole beginning of 1 Corinthians to just kind of wrap my mind around where Paul is in his argument. None of that. Didn't have time. So just focusing on chapter 7. True confessions, right? Just focusing on chapter 7, starting in verses 7 and 8. Let's just read those. I'm reading from the NIV. "I wish that all of you were as I am, but each of you has your own gift from God. One has this gift, another has that. Now to the unmarried and the widows I say, it is good for them to stay unmarried as I do." So Paul wishes that everyone were as he is, that he is unmarried. And he finds incredible significance in the fact that he's unmarried, and we'll talk a little bit why maybe he feels that way. But let's just take a few of the words in these two verses the word gift here is the word charisma, and it is the same word that is used when Paul talks about spiritual gifts in Romans and Corinthians and 1 and 2 Timothy, and it's also the same word that Peter uses in 1 Peter. Now, spiritual gifts are something that's received from God. They're not something that you earn, and that's clear throughout the biblical texts, that it's just imparted by God, and it's in you by the Spirit. And sometimes we see that spiritual gifts are received through the laying on of hands when someone else prays for you. That's the type of gift. It's the same word that he uses for spiritual gifts that he's using here to talk about being unmarried and functioning that way as a human being. And he says it is good to stay unmarried. And the word good here could be better translated excellent, precious, or beautiful. He's talking about something that is morally and spiritually good. Not just like, that donut was good, you know? It's not that casual. It's the word good in English is just so bland, right? He's really elevating by using this word here in the Greek. And he said it's good that they stay unmarried. And that word is also the word elsewhere translated abide. That they abide. So in John 15, Jesus gives this famous speech about being the true vine. And he says, I am the true vine and my Father is the gardener. Remain in me. And I also remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. That's the word that Paul is using about singleness. To stay or remain or abide in singleness. But most people just think, oh, just stay, like stay married, like just don't do something else. But I think he's calling to mind the words of Jesus by using this particular verb, because there are other verbs he could have used. But he is thinking about something deeper than just a state of not being married. He wants you to abide in this and to find purpose in this. So there's a couple things to consider just from these two verses. Paul gives us a new way to think about being unmarried. Have you ever thought about your singleness if you are single? I know there are a few married people here. You just get to listen and enjoy. Have you ever thought about your singleness as a gift from God? As a gift. How is your singleness God's gift to you? And some of these questions, I'm going to throw out a lot of questions tonight, and I don't necessarily always need an answer, but they'll be in your small group discussion. And then I would also encourage you to take the questions home and think about them. If you're a journaler, journal them. See where you go with them. So I hated this passage in my early 20s. This idea that singleness is a gift. The year I graduated from college, I was invited to 17 weddings. I was in a few. I went to a Christian college, and it wasn't like your typical college where it rang by spring. It wasn't that kind of place. But all of a sudden, the year I graduated, like everyone was getting engaged. Both of my roommates were engaged. One of them was absolutely bridezilla. One of them was totally opposite, and she was making her own invitations, and she was just having so much fun, and the other one was like super stressed out. So that was like my room, my senior year of college. And I get out of college, and all of my closest friends are married, and they're just in this like honeymoon phase of their relationship, and they're all about each other, and it was like I lost all my friends. And I was like, this is not a gift. Not when everyone else is married. It doesn't feel like a gift. And I also was raised in a family culture where the women get married young. So my mom got married at 19. A bunch of my aunts got married under the age of 22. And so I have two older female cousins, and those two did not get married till after they were 30. So we were all like graduating from college and not married. And our family seriously didn't know what to do with us. They, like my cousin, Krissa, who I will see this weekend, turned 30, and her mother bought her a subscription to eHarmony. as a gift. And so I just had never, like, no one ever talked about my future growing up, that I might not get married or that I could choose to stay single. It was always just talked about that my life story would be I would get married young and I would have a family just like every other woman in my family. And then I graduated from college and I was like totally unequipped for living alone and having to like figure out my own budget, for goodness sakes. Like, I just always kind of thought even I could do that myself, but there would be someone to do it with. So I'd never really contemplated a future where I would not be married. And that was an incredible disservice for a lot of years, because I had to figure out not only just how to live on my own, but how to value myself, because this was not the script that I had been given. So this idea of Paul saying that to be this way, to be unmarried, is a gift, was really challenging for many years. And then to have him say that it was a spiritual gift is a little puzzling. So have you ever heard like someone say to someone else, you've got the gift of singleness? Has anyone heard that? No. As a joke. What do you think, like, if someone said that to someone else, what do you think they mean by that? Okay, I mean, I suppose you could receive that message if someone said that to you. What else? What do you think?
Not marriageable somehow.
Yeah. Like, who's going to want... What else could it possibly mean? That you've got the gift of singleness. Is this just a way to spin something really bad that's happened to you? Like, who says this? And people, I think, just kind of, you know, they, like, just, it's like a little band-aid, a little spiritual band-aid. You've got the gift of singleness. You're just living it up as a single person. I have never understood why someone would say that to another person. I can receive it from the Apostle Paul, but I still have to figure out how to embrace it. So the purpose of spiritual gifts, as Paul talks about in other places in Corinthians, is to edify the church, and that's just a special word to say build up. It's an architectural image. So every spiritual gift is meant to build up the church. So he's saying that to be unmarried is so meaningful and purposeful that it too can build up the church. And yet I was receiving these messages from the church that to be single is somehow less than, or not fully adulting. So I did not know how to receive this text. So it's really an anomaly to be a single pastor, unless you're like right out of college and you're a youth pastor. So to be an almost 37-year-old pastor who's single, there aren't many of us out there. So I've interviewed at many churches and almost always am asked this question at each church. How can you as a single person minister to married people and to people with kids? Like, some people cannot conceptualize how I could be a full pastor and have a full ministry because I'm not married and I don't have kids. And in my head, I start with, well, I'm a human being. I grew up in a family. Like, I don't see myself now as building from a deficit. But this question often implies that I start with a deficit. So what Paul is saying is you have this gift of singleness that it's given to you by God. It's something to be received, not something you can earn. And so what does he mean by this? How do we receive that? So Paul also encourages believers to remain unmarried, and he says that this is an excellent and beautiful thing. So I wonder how many of you have actually thought about staying unmarried, like as a choice? Yeah? A few? That's awesome. I mean, it's not like, you know, you're super spiritual and more holy than everyone else because you're going to, like, take this incredible spiritual vow of going to be single forever. But it's good that you have received a message in which that is an okay thing to contemplate and that that could be a good thing. So I'm really happy to see so many hands go up about that. So how might remaining unmarried be an excellent or a beautiful thing? That's one of those questions I want you to contemplate. It might not be best to contemplate that in a large group setting, but take that question home with you. And also this question, if to remain or abide in singleness is a thing, then how might you live differently now if you're not married? How might abiding with Jesus in your singleness change the way that you live? Something to think about. So let's read verses 28 through 35. I don't usually just skip verses. This is, feels very strange to me. But on we march. But if you do marry, you have not sinned. And if a virgin marries, she has not sinned. But those who marry will face many troubles in this life. And I want to spare you this. What I mean, brothers and sisters, is that the time is short. Skip down to verse 32. I would like you to be free from concern. An unmarried man is concerned about the Lord's affairs, how he can please the Lord. But a married man is concerned about the affairs of this world, how he can please his wife. And his interests are divided. An unmarried woman or virgin is concerned about the Lord's affairs. Her aim is to be devoted to the Lord in both body and spirit. But a married woman is concerned about the affairs of this world, how she can please her husband. I am saying this for your own good, not to restrict you, but that you may live in a right way in undivided devotion to the Lord. So Paul starts this general section by saying, time is short. Now, here's the one little bit of context I'll give you. So in the early church, they lived in a pretty radical mindset that Jesus was coming back soon. And so that shaped a lot of their lives, the decisions they made. And so I think behind and underneath this whole passage about marriage and singleness is this thing that, okay, if Jesus is coming back soon and we need to pour into the church and send the gospel out into our community, then should we get married? Because maybe we shouldn't have that be a priority at all, because our first priority should be about the gospel. And so they were actually seriously considering these things because Jesus was on his way back. And so time is short. And so they're pondering these questions, and Paul pastorally wants to help them think these things through. So he talks to the unmarried people, and he says he wants them to be free from concern. And this word means literally to have no anxiety. To be unmarried, he thinks, is to have no anxiety. Instead, he wants them to be concerned about or to care for pleasing God and being devoted to God in both body and spirit. So literally, that's to be holy in both body and spirit. That's what it literally says. Pleasing God is a huge theme for Paul in his letters. And he's saying that you can do this even as an unmarried person, that you can please God completely with your life. And he's saying to the married people, Paul loves to talk in contrast. And I think sometimes he speaks so strongly and we're like, he can't really mean that. And so we just dial it back a tiny bit, and that's what he means. Because he's setting up these bold contrasts to make statements that stick with people. And so he says that married people he says they're divided, but the verb literally is to give you this picture that they're cut into portions. So that they have these divided priorities. They can't just be totally devoted to the Lord. They also are concerned about the things of the world, pleasing their spouse. And he, it's so interesting, he says, married people will have many troubles. And this word troubles is, everywhere else Paul uses this word, it's like with persecution. Like literal full-on persecution. So that's what his vision of marriage is. Hopefully that is not your experience of marriage. I know it is hard, but I hope it is not like literal persecution. And he's saying that married people are concerned with the things of the world. Now, I don't want you, if you're married, to receive this message that, well, I'm not as good as a single person because I've got my priorities divided. Because I think a really good, healthy marriage is going to enable both partners to be devoted to the Lord. It is a tool that enables you to devote yourself to Jesus. But in the same way, our singleness can be that too. So it's not to say that one is a tool and the other is not. They're both tools. So I don't think that Paul doesn't want to give you a bad message about marriage. He's just trying to also, like, give a good marriage about singleness. So verse 35, let's look at that again. I am saying this for your own good, not to restrict you, but that you may live in a right way in undivided devotion to the Lord. So this encouragement to remain unmarried is not to restrict you. Literally, I'm not putting a noose around your neck. That's the language he's using in Greek. I'm not hanging you by saying you can remain unmarried. He wants them to live in a right way, and right can be translated noble or honorable. And to do so is to live with undivided devotion, or literally undistracted attendance to the Lord. So some of us at dinner were talking about tipping and our servers, and how much do you tip if you get good service, and what does great service look like? So actually, this kind of, the language Paul is using here makes me think of, to be single is like you are a server and you're standing next to God as he's eating a meal, and you are just all about his next move. You want to serve him. He ran out of Coke, you're going to fill his glass. You know, you're just at his elbow waiting. You're right there with him. And that's kind of the picture that Paul is giving us about what singleness can be. So some things to consider from this section. Remaining unmarried may allow you to be less anxious or entangled by the things of the world, pleasing other things before you please God. So have you considered that? That in these days while you are unmarried, however long or short they are, that you could actually be less anxious and more devoted. So I, as a pastor, do a lot of counseling, and I know that marriage is really tough. It happens occasionally, but I don't have a lot of single people coming to me going, I am really struggling. I think that some people do, but they don't feel like it's legitimate enough to come to a pastor's office and say, I hate being single, right? But I get married people that come to me all the time and say, I can just not do this anymore. I can't handle it. I'm done. So I know that marriage is hard, and I've actually learned through observation that marriage can be the loneliest place you could know. I think people just assume, well, I'm married and I'll be fulfilled and we'll always have this great relationship and I would never be lonely if I'm married. But that is really not true. So Paul is saying that you, as an unmarried person, could be less anxious, less troubled, and therefore able to be more devoted to pleasing the Lord. But the challenge here is that, okay, you might not be devoted to pleasing your spouse because you're not married, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're not devoted to pleasing yourself, right? That's the, like, X factor that he never really talks about, that so I'm single and I don't have to worry about setting my priorities around my spouse, so I can do whatever I want. And we can easily just go off and frolic in a field and just have this wonderful life where we just please ourselves, give ourselves whatever we want. I think Paul is saying we're freeing up from this entanglement to get entangled with God, essentially, right? I mean, he talks about when you become a believer, you are freed from the slavery to sin. But then he turns around and says, but now you're slaves to God. So don't see singleness as an excuse to be selfish and just live to please yourself, give yourself whatever you want. See it as an opportunity to stand at God's elbow and say, what do you want next, God? How can I serve you next? All right, so to close our last 10 minutes or so, I want to think about some myths that Christian singles receive from the church. I've been blogging for almost 10 years, and I went in this angsty spurt where I was fine with my singleness, but I was so mad that people were still perpetuating these myths about singleness that I wrote this whole series on singleness in the church. So I've been thinking about this a lot for years. So I think the first myth that the church gives about singleness is that being married is better. And by better, I mean more sacred or holy than being single. Or put simply, that singleness means you're lacking. And that is absolutely a myth. And we can see that from what we've heard Paul say, but it's just not true. Let me confirm and affirm what Paul says, that none of that is true. I think there's two reasons this myth gets perpetuated in the church. First, that Paul uses marriage as a metaphor to help people understand how much God loves the church. You probably remember those sections in Paul's writings. But what happens is that over time we have skewed this metaphor and overextended it so that we now equate marriage as the ultimate experience of loving God, not just to help us understand God's love, if that makes sense. So we've skewed the metaphor. So now we're being told you can't fully understand how much God loves you unless you've been married or unless you're having married sex, because those things are somehow the ultimate understanding of God's love. Friends, Paul was using a metaphor, okay? So just hold on to that idea that Paul was using a metaphor. I think the second reason that this myth keeps going is that the church, and particularly the evangelical church, has made marriage an idol. If you just do a quick search on Christian book distributors, it's like the Amazon bookstore for Christian stuff, CBD, and you type in the search word singleness, you'll get 153 books. So if you wanted to explore the idea of singleness or celebrate the idea of singleness or you're struggling with your singleness, there's 153 resources for you. If you want to do the same search with the word marriage, you will find 2,281 resources. So 150, more than 2,000. So that doesn't necessarily mean the church values that, but Christian writers are sure giving a lot of their time to helping people who are married, far more time and thought and care and celebration than they are to Christians who are single. And we talked about the statistics, how they're pretty neck and neck out in general American society. I don't know within the church if that is quite as close. Probably not as even. It's probably more married adults, but far less than our parents' generation. So how many of you have gone to a church where they preach topically? So, yeah, so they'll like, you know, we're going to talk about generosity, and then they'll just choose like 10 weeks of different passages to preach about that one thing. And so how many of you have gone to churches like that where they yearly have a marriage series? Maybe not yearly, but like pretty regularly. I worked at a church in Arizona where literally 5 weeks every year we had a series on marriage. And every time I went to my pastor, who I worked for, and I said, can we have a sermon on singleness? Like, can we at least one of, like at a sixth week and have one of them be singleness? I worked for him for 3 years. He never preached on singleness. And I just think we are doing a disservice to the church demographic that is changing. It's becoming more even, single, and married. I think we need to help people understand their value, and so that means we need to preach about both things. I haven't really found this to be a problem at PBC because we don't preach topically. We just preach, you know, we pick a book and we preach on whatever we stumble across. So it's not like, you know, no one's making a real mistake by doing that here. So it's actually really refreshing. I haven't felt at PBC since I've been working here 2 years, I haven't felt like no one has sent me a message here that somehow my singleness makes me less than by always preaching on marriage or by what they preach about marriage. So being married is not better or more sacred or holy than being single. Singleness doesn't mean that you're lacking. And so I want you to carry this exhortation with you to kind of work against that myth. I want you to value yourself and value the gift of singleness. So what might that look like? To value this gift. First, I think it starts with realizing that your primary and most important identity on this earth is that you're a child of God. And that has nothing to do with your marital status. We are all children of God. It's not what role you play. It's not your gender. It's not your marital status. It's that you are a child of God. And so we're all in an even playing field. So focus on the fact that you're a child of God. What is God calling you to? How can you be his disciple? Help him make disciples? Be an ambassador for God? These are all things we're called to in Scripture. How can you use your gift to build up the church? If you start there, and if you really focus on that, if that is what you're chasing after, I think you'll find more and more increasing value in as you are right now. Because there's just really nothing about singleness that means you can't have a fully intimate relationship with God. So if you ever hear a message that undermines that fact, there's something wrong with the message you're hearing. There's nothing with singleness that means you can't have a fully intimate relationship with God. So the second myth is that being single means your life is pending. And by pending, I mean like you're just waiting. It's like, have you ever watched a horse race? And they pen in the horses in these little stalls. Or if you watch like a bronco, I don't know anything about that sport, but like they put the broncos in a pen and, you know, the guy's all like beating his hand out with the rope. And like, you're not a horse in a pen waiting to bolt like into marriage. This is just not, everyone else gets to run and you, like, they never open your gate. That is not singleness, okay? That's just, don't receive that message or that image, don't embrace it. When I went back to the CBD website and I ran the singleness marriage searches, the titles of the singleness books were often like this: Lady in Waiting, Becoming God's Best While Waiting for Mr. Right. I just want to gag. I'm sorry if any of you have read that and love it. And for the men, it was Hero, Becoming the Man She Desires. I can't even say with seriousness. I'm sorry. Again, there's nothing wrong with wanting to be married. Nothing, absolutely nothing. But these books. Ah. So I had a boss who was 10 years older than me. This was my first job out of seminary. I worked at a college. And she was 10 years older than me. And literally, we were the only two single people on the staff. So we'd do road trips a lot together. And I often was the driver, and I'd pick her up at her apartment. And she'd always be like 20 minutes late. Like, what is your deal? I'm very prompt, by the way. What is your deal? Why am I so late? She goes, I'm sorry. I was standing in front of the closet, and I just kept thinking, I could meet my husband today. And so what should I wear? Because I want it to be a good first impression. And I love her earnestness, like, but for her whole life, she was 40, and she had lived her whole adult life like that every day. She would always talk about when we'd go places, what if I meet my husband at this basketball game? I'm just thinking, girl, you are wasting so much energy on something that may not happen. Like, you could use this energy for good. Like, it felt like she was spending so much of her energy on something that wasn't certain. And I just was growing concerned. And actually, I left that job and she didn't get married for another 5 years. So she didn't get married until she was like 46. Can you imagine, like, your whole adult life waking up just thinking, maybe today's the day I'll meet my spouse? And how that might have been distracting to her. So here's my second exhortation. Live right now as a whole, healthy, satisfying, live a whole, healthy, satisfying life and make impact now. Don't wait until you're out of the gate to think that that's when you'll have an impact. Make impact now. So we have these great examples in Scripture of Jesus, right? Despite what the Da Vinci Code says, he was not married. There is no historical document that proves that. That was a work of fiction, friends, in case you didn't know. The Da Vinci Code is fiction. And so I really liked that book. Dan Brown's a good writer, but Jesus was not married. And he did never, there's no account in the Gospels that said, wait, I'm an unmarried man. Should I go out on the road and preach the gospel? He did not sit around wondering if that's what he should do. God called him, and he did it. So what is God calling you to? Remember, you're called to be a disciple and to help God make disciples. You are called to be an ambassador for God's kingdom. So who are you? How is God calling you? Go and do that. Figure out what it means. Don't wait for some coming of greater spirituality. God will give you what you need to accomplish things now. We also have this example of Paul, right? He, like, what a man. He was out and about, like, traveling the country, going to places he'd never been to. And, like, he knows that trials and persecution and jailings are waiting for him. And he's like, well, maybe I should wait if I'm married because, you know, when I get let out of prison, I'll have someone to, like, console me. My wife will be there and she'll, you know. He never had this internal dialogue. It never stopped him. He just heard the call of God and he responded. So how has God called and gifted you? How can you expand God's passion, kingdom and use your passions to make an impact? So for me, I haven't let it stop me from doing ministry, even though I actually interviewed at a church in rural California. And it was a congregational church, so this committee had been working with me for months, and I was like their top candidate. I made it through all of these rounds, and I go there, and the committee is like saying things like, when do you move here? Right? And then they recommend me without hesitation to the elders. And the elders find out that I was single, and they said, we can't have a single woman ministering to families. That doesn't make sense. How could she do that? So they did not extend the job to me. The elders hadn't known that the committee's top candidate was single. They found that out. So there are things that, there are bad messages that you will receive that you're not quite enough as a single person. Do not embrace that. It is just not true. Follow the way of Jesus. Follow the steps of Paul. Do what God has called you to do. So for me right now, my next step of faith is to adopt a child, right? I don't do that lightly. I actually spent a full year in prayer and discernment back in 2008 about whether or not I should do this foster parent to adopt thing with wise counsel from mentors, working with a counselor, going through the vetting process of foster care in Pennsylvania. Could I do this? Should I do this as a single person? And at the end of that long discernment process, I heard God say to me, I am not limiting you. I am not limiting you. The problem is I was limiting myself, right? Because I had been receiving these messages that there are things I can't or shouldn't do because I'm single. And so God let me make this choice to pursue this by saying, I am not limiting you. And I've just seen God make things happen for me to do this. Now, I've waited 8 years because you also have to be wise. Sometimes it's not the right time, but I am a licensed foster parent. I'm just waiting for a match. And I'm not going to do it alone. Kristen's on my support team. There's a bunch of other people here at church who are ready to help me raise a child. Because I feel called to do that kind of justice in the world. That's the kind of justice that I can do, that I feel called to and that I feel equipped to do. It might not be, may not be the kind of justice God calls you to, but I believe he calls all of his people to act out justice in the world. Because our world is broken and it needs us. The last myth is that single people are often lonely and they don't understand intimacy. I really hate this one because I think that we have so entangled our understanding of intimacy with sex that we lose sight of other intimacies that are available to us. So I think the world doesn't have any other definition of intimacy beyond sex, but that is just not true. friendship can be incredibly intimate. So my best friend's name is Stephanie. She lives in Pennsylvania. And I have told her every secret I have. I've confessed sin to her. I've told her about wounds that I have that I haven't told many people. I call her when I'm hurting. And I just show up in front of Stephanie and I share who I am with her, and I'm not trying to hide anything. I just come to her as I am. And do you know what she offers me? No judgment, love. She speaks forgiveness over me. She encourages me. That is intimacy. Isn't that what we do with God? The ultimate intimacy that we can have with God is to stand in front of God naked. And by that I mean where our sin is out there for him to see. He can see everything about us. We are completely exposed before God. And what does he offer us? Love, forgiveness. He draws us into his family. He lives in relationship with us, a covenant relationship. There's nothing more intimate than that. So you don't have to have sex be a part of your life to understand intimacy. And it is not the only intimacy. So I have also two Christian friends. They're both women. They both are married and they both have three children. And they really struggle and have struggled for more than a decade with same-sex attraction. And these women can come to me and they can speak openly about that. And they can call me when they're really struggling, when they're confused. One of them called me this week and she said, "Corey, you know I've gotten to multiple counselors and I really had a breakthrough this week. And I have something new to think about in my struggle with same-sex attraction." And so we talked about that. Do you know how much courage that takes for someone in the Christian community to tell that to someone else? Is there something more intimate than that? So I think we just really need to open our eyes to see that there are other kinds of intimacy beyond sex, and those things are really fulfilling. So please do not underestimate friendship. If you want to have intimate relationships, you have to take risk. You have to invest in a relationship. You have to be vulnerable. You can't just, like, there's friendships that are just fun and kind of superficial, and you just hang out and you have a good time and you know, that person's your friend. But the kind of friendship I'm talking about is something you have to invest in. These things are available to you, but you have to put into them. So I want you to take the risk to be vulnerable and to build friendships like this, because I think that the only way that I'm healthy as a single person in this world and in the church with all of these negative messages coming at me is that I have such deeply fulfilling and intimate relationships. I don't have sex, and my life is not lacking. So please just don't get those things skewed in your head, but pursue deep and intimate relationships. So just two encouragements for my married friends in the room. Another thing that has helped me be a healthy single person is that I have had friends that have kept their lives open to me when they've gotten married and when they've had kids, and that is invaluable to me. Like I said, I like to adopt other people's children, but I think it's a beautiful thing to have relationships across boundaries. The church is really good at segregating. We're all young adults here, right? And I do women's ministry, and there's men's ministry, and there's young couples this, and there's seniors that. But we, I think, can learn more by being in relationship with people who are different from us than we can learn by staying in relationship with people who are very much like us. So if you're married or about to be married, please don't cut out your single friends. Find ways that they can just continue to live life with you. The Dodsons and I are very good friends. I'm over at their house at least once a week for dinner. Sarah loves to cook. I hate it. She knows this. She ministers to me by welcoming me. And their kids, I'm like their aunt. And so we invest in each other's lives in equal ways, and that's a beautiful thing. And my single friends here, I just want to you probably have heard this before, but I really want you to maybe take this and sit with this, that sex is not casual. The world is telling us this, right? Everywhere. I can't tell you how many times when I listen to the radio on the way to work that the people that talk on the news, the disc jockeys or whatever they're called in the morning. I'm losing my words. I'm getting tired. I can't tell you how many times they're just laughing and joking about the porn that they watch. And they just talk about how it's so casual. And they talk about, like, having sex with multiple people. Like, it's just like I bought apples and oranges at the grocery store. You know, like it's just this casual thing. And as a pastor who mostly works with older women, actually, I spend more time counseling people who are in their 40s, 50s, 60s, who are still bearing the shame and the baggage that they had from the sexual activity and choices that they made back in their 20s. It is haunting them. And they're married and otherwise very healthy, but when they stop pretending and they come to my office, they're telling me, this is how I cannot escape this. I have been praying about this for years, and it is a burden that I can no longer bear. What do I do? And there were decisions and actions they did decades before. And so you are hearing this message that sex is casual, that porn is not a big deal, but my friends, it is. It is a big deal because what we do with our bodies imprints on our souls. What we do with our bodies imprints on our souls. And that is not to shame you. I say this because I want you to be healthy, and I don't want you to become burdened like the people that I see. So if, you know, you've been living a life where you've just been really casual about your sexual activity, or you just have been, you know, starting to look at porn and you think, well, I'm not looking at it very much, I really want to caution you to try to disentangle yourself from these things and get help. Whether it's you come to Dan or you come to me or just to another believer that you trust, I want you to find pathways to healthier choices, because I do not want your soul to suffer decades from now because of the things you take lightly now. And I say that with love, right? We are all humans. I'm a normal human being. I have sexual desires, but I have to find a way to manage those that is healthy, that doesn't harm me. And that's really important to me because I want to serve God. So I don't want those things to become a distraction, and I don't want those things to cause me suffering. So I'm actively always trying to figure out, what does that mean for me? So sometimes that means, like, I'm super careful about what I watch on TV. And I don't know if, like, I heard about House of Cards and it's this great show. Everyone was talking about it. And I watched an episode, and I'm like, whoa! I have never watched another episode. It's like, I'm not saying there's, like, hard and fast categories for everyone. Everyone has different sensitivities. I cannot watch things like that. Because I'm curious, right? I'm a normal human being. And so I'm like, oh, what? Like, it's kind of like a car accident. Like, you can't help but look, but you want to look away. And so you get more curious, and you watch one more thing. And just one more thing. So I'm really careful about what I watch. So you have to figure out what your limits are and what is going to be healthy for you and what healthy choices are. But for your souls, my friends, I want you to be very careful. I want you to love yourself. And sometimes that means making sacrifices that the world say are ridiculous. So if you need help with that, if you need someone to pray with you about that, help you find actually practical things that you can do to be healthy, please come and talk to me or talk to Dan. We'd be happy to companion you as you figure this out. So I will send you to your small groups to talk about some of this. And please just know I'm always available to you. Thanks.